if you think about Medi-Cal and Cover California, the buying decision is a patient's decision. It's not an employer's decision. And patients are fed up. Like, patients are fed up of hauling, being the information Sherpas for their own healthcare.
And now, from San Francisco and the UCSF Rosenman Institute, the Health Technology Podcast with your host, Christine Winoto.
Our guest today is Claudia Williams, CEO of Manifest MedX, the largest nonprofit health data sharing network in California. Manifest MedX collects data from small practices, hospitals, and health plans so that providers can access a unified record of patients' health information. Claudia previously served as Senior Advisor for Health Technology and Innovation at the White House, helping to lead President Obama's Precision Medicine Initiative. She believes that the next step to improve healthcare in America is to unlock information from its silo and put it in the hands of innovators. Here's our conversation. Welcome, Claudia. Thanks for joining me this afternoon. It's so dark outside, make it hard to know what time it is. I'm so excited to share your story, your insight with our listener today, because I think you've done so much. You have quite an accomplished career path. You started your own business. You work in a government high offices like the White House, and you led a project or a team in a not-for-profit foundation. And now you started, you know, this new adventures that you do. Can you give us a bit of the flavor of your career path and the choices that you made and how you seized the opportunity in front of you that came in front of you?
You know, it's always hard. It's always easier looking back to see a pattern than it is going forward. I would say that I'm two things. I'm super attracted to big, bold, important missions that create new possibilities in healthcare, combining technology and policy. So I'll talk a little bit about that, because actually what I'm doing now is the same. So I've always looked for those places where the team is working on something that almost seems like it's not possible, but where with the right tools and the right levers from both government as well as the human power, as well as technology, you're able to make like amazing progress that you never thought you could. So that when I was asked actually to join the White House, it was to play a role in really knitting together the threads of work going on across the government in health technology and data. So looking at the VA and looking at NIH and looking at FDA and all of those pieces. And what made me interested in that was partly the amazing leader I got to work with, which was Todd Park, who many of your listeners probably know. So Todd is notable in having founded multiple companies that have really vastly succeeded, but he also really believes in the power of government to create the most profound change. So I was super excited to pull together those threads. So where can government create new opportunities for Americans? How can we tap the potential of data and technology? And what's a team that's really willing to like dig in and work on that hard issue together? And so actually Todd was the link to my current role, because his old colleague from back in the day was Paul Markovich, the CEO of Blue Shield of California. And Todd said, hey, I think you should talk to my friend Paul, because he's trying to do something really hard and really important in California, which is building this digital data ecosystem to really enable care improvement. And so when I talked to Paul Markovich and saw, here's this big, bold mission that takes into account the possibilities of data and technology, the possibility of improving the lives of Californians, and a team that can really try to get this done, it was just as exciting as an opportunity as joining the White House, frankly. So I would say Todd Park individually as a human being is partly why I've taken the path I've taken. But in this way of like creating these opportunities more than once that bring together those threads.
So, you know, I've never been to the White House. The idea of working in the White House, like what you just explained to me, it's healthcare itself is complex. And then trying to bring all this, you know, different entity within the government and coalesce them together, that seems impossible to us. But can you tell us about, like, you know, how the work that you've done at the White House, how is that impacting citizens like us?
Sure. I'll give a specific example. In his final 2 years of office, President Obama became really interested in precision medicine. And his interest, and actually as a senator, I don't know if people know this, but one of the only bills he sponsored was on precision medicine. So his kind of frame of reference was, here's this amazing future body of science, but it feels now like we have a little discovery here and there, but it's not really something that's available broadly to Americans. And even the genomics-based scientific stuff seems very siloed in particular organizations that have a lot of capacity to do that work. And so the question he brought to his team at the White House was, what would it really look like to scale and democratize this body of science? And can you help me figure that out? Now, of course, he said in a slightly more pointed way, like, you need to come up with a plan. And so we, along with, you know, Francis Collins and actually Eric Lander, who's now the head of the science office in the current White House, started to really ask this question, like, what can be the role of government in bringing these science and data innovations to a much broader community of people across the U.S. And what we ended up, what came out of that is something that is now called the All of Us Research Project, which is a new million-person research cohort that will bring together clinical data, wearables data, and genomics data to be a democratic platform for scientific discovery for the nation. That's awesome, and that's a thing. But this was very much in keeping with the way President Obama worked. He also said, like, listen, it's great to do that thing and we will get that funded and Congress funded it. But how are the principles manifested in that? How are you going to spread those across all of government? So we were like, oh, great. It's easy. You know, it's hard enough to do the thing. But now, so we actually convened every imaginable part of government. So, you know, energy, where the the massive computing capacity of the Department of Energy, the VA that had, and DOD that had their own cohorts, the Office of Civil Rights that was trying to describe how patients were going to have access to their own data, private sector companies, from Google to Epic, who made commitments about how to actually liberate data that could be used for this kind of scientific discovery. So the way I think the nub of what we did, and I think this, I expect to see similar things with President Biden, is to lay claim to a really bold idea, create something substantial within government that will take that forward, the All of Us research effort, align all of the different activities of government around those concepts and principles, but then also invite in everybody in the country to say, how might you also take steps to further this vision? And it's a messy process. It's not like it's a much more ecosystem building complex kind of change making thing than it is like a project management plan. But I think that is how we make change.
Yeah. I just listening to what you're saying, I'm just thinking about, you know, there's so many different stakeholders. There's so many different, I mean, how do you bring them together to, you know, achieve this goal? Because I think, you know, everybody have their own, you know, reason and interest.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, what we would often do in very practical terms is have an event or another convening or some point of reference that was a specific date, and actually invite private sector partners to say, what are you doing and what could you be doing in this space that would really accelerate this work? So there's a kind of way in which you can do that because you can use, for instance, you know, the president's announcements and the president's work to get more good stuff to happen, right? And it's, So I think it's really using the platform of the White House and of the president to build an invitation for the world, right? And that's very different from a very specific policy. So an example is during that era, I went out to all the EHR vendors, the largest ones, and said, like, what could you do to support this work? And it was just at the beginning phase of FHIR APIs. And we kind of came up with this concept that a patient could donate their own data to research using a FHIR API, and we called that Sync for Science. And then we got five EHR vendors to commit to doing that. And then Josh Mandel, who's now at Microsoft, kind of convened that group to come up with the implementation guide for that. And they went off and did that important work, right? And so you can use, and I think this is broadly something we can do in all of our roles, is how do we create an invitation for participation around a bold vision that's more than any one of us alone.
And in a way, you're empowering this private sector to do certain things to achieve the goal that the government, the policy support.
Yes.
It sounded that way. That's so my question before you move on to your more current role. And actually, I have another question for your prior role, but I want to ask. So the work that you've done in the White House with all this new technology, I think there's a lot of initiative during the President Obama's time. How is that, do you think, is being used in fighting the war on COVID right now? Or is it kind of being stashed for the last 4 years and hopefully now it's being leveraged?
I mean, that's a many-layered question. I would say that a lot of effort in the last decade has been placed on just digitizing patients' health records, right, to promote adoption of electronic health records. And that work is really important because if you think about a doctor trying to find out if their patients with diabetes actually are receiving the right care, like if you have a bunch of paper records, that's like a many-month project. But at the same time, I think to some degree, that work focused more on getting the data digital than it did on what is the framework for sharing. And so I think in the last administration, they started to attack this question of sharing, right? So we have a new set of regulations called the information blocking regulations that say, if you can share the data legally, you should do that. We have now a new set of FHIR APIs that allow that work, you know, the data to be shared. I think we'll be continuing to push on that set of questions because the culture we have is really still around not sharing. And so I actually feel like on that question, we need now the culture and the business to move ahead of the technology. Like, you can't force this stuff to happen by new standards. You need to actually start to punish businesses that are aligned around silos, not around sharing. So I think there's a set of culture and business work we need to do that is going to be driven more by, by things like value-based care and maybe some degree of penalties for information blocking and that set of things. I also think, though, that COVID has revealed that that attention on providers and on their EHRs has left out a vast part of our ecosystem, which is public health. And so while we've been so focused on getting everybody to have electronic health records and start to share and stuff, we've sort of said, and you over there in public health, you figure this out too. And they're like, we don't have the money. We don't have the talent. We don't have, and you can't have like one system for public health data sharing and a separate system for clinical. Those two things connect. And you have to have the same infrastructure serving both. So I think the big, exciting, important, challenging issue we're going to be facing in the next 12 months is, what is a modernized public health data infrastructure? How do we best enable that? What does that suggest for the relationship between clinical care and public health? What are some frameworks and models? And this gets us into the work that I'm doing in California. And it has to include adequate funding and talent and models and frameworks to support our public health colleagues. Because while I think people like to talk about how broken all that COVID data is, it's not for lack of trying. It's because those systems have not been prioritized for not just this year, for many, many, many years. And I think we're finally recognizing the need to do that. And so I'm really excited when, for instance, I think about the office I used to be in the White House, the Office of Science and Technology Policy. I want them to engage around that question and to really have an all of government perspective on how to shore up the infrastructure we need for that space. So those would be the two pieces I would just highlight. Is one is more culture and business, and one is more like this has been ignored, largely ignored area of investment for many years.
And how do you think the government can engage a private sector in terms of trying to shore up that investment?
Well, let me talk a little bit about what I'm doing in California as a back end way to get to that question. So what do I do in California? I lead Manifest MedX. We are the largest nonprofit health data sharing network in the state. We bring together data from small practices, hospitals, and health plans. So that means we bring together clinical and claims data so that a patient whose providers and health plans are in our network will have a unified record that can be accessed by any of those parties to actually make sure you're not lugging around like a grocery sack of records every time you go to the doctor. But now let's go to this question of public health. So we have this governance network. We have a set of policies. We have data sharing. We have ways to segment the data by who should access what. So now we're talking about COVID, and we suddenly realize that the vaccination effort is probably going to be almost completely divorced from care delivery. So we may have a set of pop-up places doing it. You may go for a vaccination to Sutter, even though you're cared for by Kaiser. So now we have this challenge where everybody wants to help, make sure everybody gets vaccinated, but your average doctor, hospital, and health plan has zero understanding of who's been vaccinated. So the opportunity we have as a network that already exists is, hey, state, give us the vaccination data, and we will push it to all of those partners for their patients. So if we have a completely distinct public health effort, there's going to be no way to reach out to a patient who hasn't been vaccinated, who's a Medi-Cal enrollee, right? Mm-hmm. And so we, as a network serving the whole state, can be a really important connection point between the public health world and the clinical world. And we have to build those connections as rapidly as we possibly can. So I don't know if that answers. Likewise, I think your question was, what about private sector entities? Well, I think what we're discovering is a lot of those technology partners and innovators that want to work, let's say an innovator wants to work with Blue Shield of California, as an example. They probably spend the first 2 years or 18 months signing a data sharing agreement, figuring out the data standards for how they're going to get the data, building interfaces, arguing for like bandwidth from the Blue Shield like technology team. And then maybe month 19, they get to show that their like adherence app really works. Well, that's impossible. By that time, that poor little startup is out of business, right? So as an organization that's already bringing in the Blue Shield claims data and clinical data, so if Blue Shield says to us, we have a new innovation partner over here. We are authorizing them to get access to the APIs for all of our patients. MX, as our business associate, please send them the data. That app could actually start to demonstrate, effectiveness of that intervention, maybe in month 3, not in month 19. So I think there's, as an accelerant for innovation, we need to take this data aggregation and cleaning a part of our work isn't part of our competitive advantage as a new innovator. It's just something we have to do, and it's a pain in the butt, right? And so if what I'd like to see is an intermediary like MX that has business associate relationships with all of our partners, we can help make it easier for them to partner with innovators. But that's a little bit off topic of the COVID thing, but I think you'll see the extensions.
This podcast is sponsored by Brown Rutnick's Global Life Sciences Group, a team of legal professionals that help life science companies, lenders, and investors around the world turn good science into good business. Learn more at brownrutnick.com. This podcast is also sponsored by Canon Quality Group. Canon Quality Group has been helping med tech startups set up quality management systems for over 10 years. If you're unsure when to get started with quality management in your startup, turn to the experts at canonqualitygroup.com.
Which is a good segue to talk more about your work at MedX. And you mentioned about, you know, it's Todd Park who kind of dragged you or make you start this. It seems it makes a lot of sense, you know, data, like what you were explaining with the Blue Shield Anthem story. Like, what is the incentive for Blue Shield to share that data with you instead of keeping them? And, you know, how do you coalesce with a lot of different data owners and then bring that data?
I mean, I think it starts with a vision and a business driver of feeling that there is pretty massive transformation needed to, in order to deliver higher quality care at a lower cost in a more seamless and engaged way, both for doctors and for patients. So I would say Blue Shield as a company has a commitment to moving in that direction. And they're partnering with providers to enable that vision. So whether that's an ACO or a new, you know, improving HEDIS or a new primary care payment model that they're looking at, it comes down to how do we organize our joint work in pursuit of better quality, better experience, and lower costs, right? And so a big part of that has to be sharing data across your partners, right? It has to be, you're going to have access to claims data. I'm going to have access to clinical data. Together, we will set goals. Now, one way to do that is you say, I'm going to have an ACO and we're going to, we'll figure out a specific way to share data for that effort. So we're going to download to an SFTP site every month our claims, and then that'll be part of our business agreement. But it turns out that if every health plan has a distinct way of doing that, and they're trying to partner with every provider, and it's all different, then you're spending all of your time trying to figure out how to do that versus actually doing the innovation work together. So I think there's a common recognition among large, you know, among people that are trying to change the way healthcare operates, that we need to standardize how we do that data sharing so that we can actually have any spare bandwidth to focus on the actual innovation we're trying to create. And that the work of, like, it's going to be HL7 V2 or CCDA or these data types, it's not value added. Like, it's just stuff we have to get through to get to the real work we want to do. So I think that's one reason. I would also say there's, if you look across the country and look at other states that have been successful, there is a movement towards just data sharing as a minimum standard of delivering care, right? And so a state like North Carolina, as an example, has said, anyone who's doing public business with us through Medicaid, through public, you know, employees or through other mechanisms is going to have to share data with HIE. So, and what we see most recently in the governor's budget, the proposed budget that came out a couple weeks ago, is the governor proposed the same thing. The governor said, if you are a CalPERS planner provider, if you are a Medi-Cal planner provider, or if you are a Covered California planner provider, we want you to share data through an HIE. So I also think there's an aspect of this for forward-leaning plans and providers that, like, this is coming. Let's actually get ahead of it and build it in a way that really works for us, right? So I think, and I think a final aspect of this is as more of healthcare is decisions are made by individual patients. So if you think about Medi-Cal and Covered California, the buying decision is a patient's decision. It's not an employer's decision. And patients are fed up. Like, patients are fed up of hauling, being the information Sherpas for their own healthcare. So I also think there's an important part of this, which is skating to that puck of truly seamless experience and knowing that the only way you're going to be able to do that is through much more seamless data sharing. And that if you think of Kaiser as a model for that, which has a closed system and a lot of ability to do that, how might we create a virtual equivalent of that in the world that's not Kaiser? And it can only exist through data sharing, right?
Yeah, no, that's, it's almost like Kaiser and steroid in a way that gather all that information. So as a patient, you know, how is my data ownership is impacted when we share it with your organization?
Sure. So today, the way you asked the question about patients, sort of patients as a empowered body to actually get their data, and a couple things I would just say. The first thing I would say is, in under HIPAA is the privacy construct that we all operate under, right? Mm-hmm. What HIPAA says is really interesting. HIPAA says, if you want to share with a provider, you can do that for the service of your patient. You may do that. What it says for patients is you must share records with patients. That is the only must that exists in HIPAA. What we do is pipe a full record set to the covered entities, so the providers and plans, so that when the patient asks for data from that provider or plan, they don't just get the data from that plan. They could get their full record of data. So one of the ways that we enable that kind of empowerment of patients is being sure that the entities that have an obligation to share data with patients do that. I think an interesting question that's coming up now is, how might organizations like MX directly share information with patients, right? What's been interesting is we don't have a relationship with patients. Like one of the things that organizations like us are trying to figure out is, how would we like ID proof a patient? Because we never see them, right? We're just sort of there in the background. So we're trying to figure out some of those questions around how might we do that in an easy and seamless way for patients. A final question is, what if I don't want to participate in this data sharing, right? And so what we do is enable patients to opt out of the data sharing. And so they can contact us and say, I don't really want a part of this. Now, that's not the way the rest of healthcare doesn't operate that way, because under HIPAA, there's not really a consent option. But under our data sharing, there is. So if you decide that we have very, very few patients who do this, it's about 2% of patients. But if this isn't for you because you're really concerned about how information's being shared, even among your providers, you have the option to opt out of it. So I think it's a really interesting evolving space. And one of the things you're going to see is HIEs like MX, like trying to figure out how might we more directly serve patients, but technologically, how would that really work? Given that we don't have like a membership or a patient relationship with those people.
Okay. My last question before we conclude. As a technology innovators, how can we access how can we work with you in order to prove our, data, like our whatever that we need to do in order to get to the next step?
It's a great question. So your listeners probably know that we cannot directly share data with a technology innovator, that it doesn't ever really. So our ability to share would depend on their relationship with a provider or a plan. What I would recommend is for those innovators to go to their either existing or prospective plan and provider partners and say, did you know that you could get this data from MX? And here's what I could demonstrate for you using those data, right? So think about, if you had all the claims data from Blue Shield for their members, if you had all the admit discharge transfer data from the hospitals we participate. So I would have them study and learn what is that data and how might they partner effectively with a provider. And then that provider would request that we send the data to the technologist. So it's a little bit of a one step remove, because we don't have a legal ability to share data, but it's a really wonderful opportunity.
It's almost as a the technology innovators, they don't know what you have, right? And so does it make sense for them to approach you and then tell them, like, this is what are the things that we are looking for? Is this something that your data set can help us?
We are happy to do that. Yeah. To talk with them and explain what the data looks like and how we share it with a provider or plan. We just can't directly share the data without a request from a covered entity, right? To do that. I'm sorry to get into all the HIPAA stuff, but we're happy to say we have these providers. Here's the type of data. In fact, on our website, we're very open about this. So we have on our website a list of all of our network participants and what data they're sharing with us today. So mm-hmm. that's a great place to start, right? It lists every single practice, every single hospital, every single health plan, and exactly what data we're getting. I would say another thing for those innovators that are newer to this space is you need to be conversant in CCDAs, Fire APIs, HL7 V2. Like, you need to know what those standards are and what data are made available through that. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing with some of the innovators that we're working with is if they don't have a team that understands that, it's a big lift for them. Right. So also, I would say for people getting into the space, know your data, know your standards, understand what those structures and formats look like so that if you're able to have an opportunity like get data from MX, you're ready to go and use that information.
Okay, well, that's great. Well, thank you for sharing how your team works. MX is the product. You call it product or do you call that your...
A platform and product, both, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And how for our, for the innovators to engage with you. And will it list is your website? Can you say what your website just so that it's medx? Oh.
It's manifestmedx.org.
Okay.
www.manifestmedx.org. Yeah. Okay. It's such a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time. And it's such a pleasure to talk with your audience as well.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your time. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Health Technology Podcast. We want to thank our executive producer, Herminio Neto, our content writer, Kelly Muscat, and our podcast engineer, Andrew Rojek. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. The Health Technology Podcast is available on all major platforms.